backlash against Carlton.
National Radio News, produced by Charles Sturt University, the Community Radio Network, and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Southern FM News.
Good morning and welcome to Best Medicine with me, Gaetana. Jam-packed program. I've just got to try again to get my first guest, Marianne O'Connor, with her wonderful Anzac novel, At the Going Down of the Sun, a historical fiction. Then it's 10:20 a.m, Sean Burford, who won the title of Australia's Greatest Dunny Hunter in 2022. Or 2023, I'm not sure which, but it's about, of course, the Continents Foundation's updating their wonderful toilet map of Australia and how important that is. And then at 10:40, I'll speak with Vicky McKay from Sandringham Lifesaving Club about the Silver Salties program. They're a finalist in the Victorian Sports Awards in the Peter Norman Inclusion Award category. So all really important stuff and very, very interesting. So do stay with me. A little bit of music while I try and get hold of Marianne. Just fading down that Richard Clayderman version of our much-loved Waltzing Matilda, because I have on the line Marianne O'Connor. Marianne, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Now, your book, At the Going Down of the Sun, big people, you want a good, big, long read? It's big and it's terrific. It's got so much in there, and yes, I did look at your notes, author notes at the end, etc., and acknowledgements, and perhaps we will actually start with that little bit, because you're doing historical novels and you do draw from actual history, and you've got a bit of family history that it plays an important part, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. I'm actually the granddaughter of an Anzac, an original Anzac from Gallipoli, which... That sounds a bit funny because I'm only in my 50s, but he was only 17 when he joined up. He put his age up, as they do.
Yes, so they did that a lot, didn't they?
They certainly did. He was a country boy from Parkes and Orange, and I think that he saw it as a great adventure. I think they all did.
And
certainly the characters in the novel see it that way. And when he actually got there, he was in Cairo and he had a great old time. And by the time he got to Gallipoli, he was 18. And I think the shock of it must have been horrendous, that they've gone from what they think is a good old lark to their friends just falling next to them and being barraged by bullets. And he got badly hurt and ended up in hospital in Cairo. And he got honourably just discharged. And the very first thing he did was to rejoin.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, he said years later, you can't leave your mates to face that alone, which I think is very poignant.
It is very. And it's one of those things, it may be others too, it's one of those things about Aussies and I think New Zealanders too, there's that strong sense of responsibility towards your mates, isn't there?
There is, and it was actually interesting because I had an interview a week or so ago when we were talking about this very thing, and she said, you don't really see it anymore, that kind of loyalty, that incredible courage for one another. And I said, I have to beg to differ because, you know, in Sydney, just a few days prior, we had that terrible event at Westfield and Bondi, and the incredible courage of people, they were really laying down their life for total strangers.
Yes.
And, and I don't think you really know what you're capable of. You can do extraordinary things under extraordinary circumstances, and you've got that cometh the hour, cometh the man.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're capable
man
of.
Man and woman, know. Using man for all genders, in fact, you know.
I know. And Shakespeare, how dare he?
Yeah. But, well, you know, at the time, but I think he did mean others as well. Yes, and we do know, and I watch Landline almost every week, we know that in rural and regional areas there's a heck of a lot still of that helping each other, looking out for each other, etc. As well as, I think you find it, and of course with the one you were referring to, the incident in Sydney, the terrible situation, you had people in shops trying to shelter customers and things and hide them and protect them. You had a range of things going on, of people being courageous and not thinking just of themselves but of others. So, yeah,
yes,
I think it's still there. I think it's still there, you know.
And it is, and I think courage is apparent when it's called upon. And I think these young men showed the very best of human spirit, you know, and I think it's one of the reasons the Anzac legend is so incredibly sacred to us.
Yes.
Is that we know collectively that our generation of young men, 400,000 went over and 200,000 got either injured or killed.
Yeah.
And that's a generation and the scar upon Australia, that deep wound of lost love.
Oh,
but
yes.
But they were so brave. They were so brave.
And, of course, so many of them were volunteers who joined up. They weren't the trained defence forces we have these days, highly trained. They were people who just felt they ought to do their duty.
That's right. I mean, the book is actually set a lot from the air and the unknown.
I was coming to that, yes. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that they, you know, you're seeing Gallipoli from above, which is rare, you know. And I got the idea from an SBS series called Gallipoli from Above. And there were Australian pilots there and I thought that was just so interesting. But it's that feeling you get when you're in a plane and you're looking down.
Oh, yeah.
And you're seeing the world from a totally different perspective. And I just think, imagine how they felt, those pilots, to look down and to see the little ants crawling over the hills, you know, is the way I saw it. And those little ants, though, they perished there. And they were like 18, 19, 20-year-old boys. I have boys that age.
Yeah.
And you just think, you know, what a terrible waste of life. What a futile undertaking that still happens in the world today.
It
shouldn't be.
No.
It shouldn't be.
And I think that's where you've done such a great job, not only of introducing us to the early days of flight and two of the major characters, the brothers, Tom and Archie, who are trying to get a biplane, a very very questionable biplane made by a mate of their father's, won by their father in a poker game. They're trying to get it to a workable level so they can fly it. And, of course, when they finally can fly, that, as you say, the perspective from above, looking down, is an amazing difference. And also that exhilaration and joy, you capture that. And, of course, similarly for the main woman, the wonderful Molly, it gives her such a different perspective. So literally and metaphorically, flight is an amazing thing. And yet, of course, it becomes another weapon used in war. And there's a very poignant moment when one of them too is looking down at the Gallipoli beach doing the recon beforehand and thinking it's going to be a disaster. It's just going to, it will be.
He could see it.
Yeah. Again, and, by and being above. Yeah.
And it's just such, there's a few reasons why I think it's so relevant and so sad and tragic, is that to be up there, to know that there's nothing that you can do to stop this.
Yeah.
That your own friends are going to be going out there and all these other young men, and you know it. And you're looking down and you're thinking, why are they doing this?
Yeah.
And that creeping sense of foreboding must have been so terrible. And they tried so hard to stop it, you know.
Yeah.
That wonderful real-life character of Charles Villiers Stewart, who was only a young man himself in early 20s, I think he was about 24 or something, just got married and had a baby and was over there as a major.
Yeah.
And he went in one of those planes. Never been in a plane. Never been in one. And he went up there and he had a piece of paper with a thumbnail tack and a pencil, and he drew everything he could find. And see, he's a tactician, you know. And he came back and he built a plaster model of the whole thing.
Mm.
I mean, how ingenious, you know. And he's such an amazing character. But then he was so committed to trying to save the lives of the soldiers and do everything he could that he went over in the third wave and he got killed.
It's tragic. It is such a tragedy. There was a man who could have made enormous contributions for life. And that's what I think you do so well, is capture that feeling. At first, you know, so many of the people in Rainbow don't want their loved ones to go. And then they're all united in trying to do whatever they can for the war effort. And, of course, what we haven't done is set the scene that Molly is a girl from a wealthy family in Adelaide. She's been banished for a certain reason by her parents to her aunt in the country, her Aunt Mavis in Rainbow. And actually, the experience is wonderful for her from so many points of view. It is a liberation and it allows her to be her own true self and to do things that she really wanted to do, and one of which was to find a true friend. Because you get that feeling, it's so stitched up. People are so restricted by societal norms, but she goes there and she finds more real people, doesn't she?
Yes, I think that there's a fair few contrasts in the book, but one of them is, you know, high society and the class distinction and,
yes,
and snobbery and
yes,
so on, looking down on the rural
people again.
And the farmers, you know, who were the backbone of the land. But anyway, but both brothers fall in love with her, which is, we've got this love triangle. And that was really hard to write because you kind of didn't want the reader to feel like Molly was ever playing them off. That what really worked in my favour, and I think when I was writing it, was there were such long periods of time that they were separated and they were so young. I mean, you know, they only know each other for a short period of time and then they're gone for a year or maybe longer. Mm. And so the idea of her feasibly being torn between two brothers, I think, is very realistic. And I certainly hope the reader can feel that, because I know when I was writing it, I was feeling it. Yeah. I was like, oh, what's she going to do? You know, because it's so hard, because there's different reasons to love both of them. They're both wonderful men.
They're wonderful people. And that's the other thing where, again, we're seeing the loyalty. Those two brothers, Archie the oldest, full of responsibility, very interested in science, technology, etc. Tom, the philosopher, thinker, reader, etc. They're both good. They're both deeply loyal to each other, and again they're torn too, so there's that. But also I love the fact that Molly is determined she's going to go nursing no matter what, and with a friend off she goes. And of course there is again another, she's only 18 I think you said in the book, and she's there dealing with men who've had limbs shot off, who've been blinded, all sorts of things. And this is what these young nurses and women were doing. That's what they were doing, dealing with and trying to comfort, support, aid, do everything they could to help these young fellows. And, of course, just the horror. So we've got the whole sense of that destructiveness of war. And for
yes, it was really sad writing that bit. I mean, there's one or two times when the girls can't quite handle it because it's so tragic, but they have to. And they have to help this boy put on a prosthetic leg and walk again and things like that. And it was so, and there was times I had to walk away from the computer because I just felt my heart was breaking across, you know, a generation or two. I could feel the pain of these nurses. I could feel, and I wanted to portray that to the reader.
Oh,
I wanted them to understand that, you know, this should never happen again. But this is why the incredible courage is still remembered, because it wasn't just the men, it was the women, it was everyone involved, it was the civilians, you know, what they had to do.
And that's another thing I'm grateful to you for doing, and doing it well, without going necessarily into the most gruesome details, but giving us a sense of it. The effect on civilians here and elsewhere, the effect in terms of the fears, the losses, the pain, the suffering, the impacts on families, communities, etc. But also there was rationing. They had to live through really tough times. Plus, of course, the Germans in France and the terrible treatment of the French people.
Look, you know, it's there's times that I remember my grandmother saying to me a long time ago, she lived with us, and she was obviously the wife of my Anzac grandfather, James Clancy. And she said to me once, my washing machine had broken down, and I was whinging about it and moaning. And she said, I don't think your generation really knows what hardship is. And she said it in a really gentle, loving way, because a mean word never came out of that woman's mouth, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just so, I sort of paused, because I know what she had been through. It was always these stories around the table with my great big family.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got 26 cousins stuff on that side, you know, and they're always talking about this stuff. You know,
oh, you and greedy person, always, aren't you?
Oh, my goodness. I've got so many stories coming out of both sides, I'll tell you. But they used to talk a lot about the war years and the Depression years.
Like, yeah.
Because they went through World War One.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, she was 17 when she married my grandfather. She had 8 children. And then World War II, they went through the Great Depression.
And he
had to pan for gold and live off rabbit.
Yep.
They had to go and squat on land.
Yeah.
And then come back to Sydney. They lived through the worst times. And then they had to go through World War II and watch their own sons go to war.
That generation, the amount of suffering and the demands on them to be resilient and strong, it's just it really does make us sit up and pay attention, you know, it really does.
It really does. And it's so, like my auntie, she lost her new husband in World War II and my mother still talks about it, you know.
Yeah.
She's got dementia now, she's finally sort of fading, but up until recently she was still talking about that she'll never get, they'll never get over it as a family.
Oh, no.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's just so tragic. And I think that when my grandmother said that, just that one little comment, and it might sound like she was judging, but she so wasn't. She was just gently reminding me.
We
live in such a lucky time.
Oh, we do. And I think we need to keep that in mind. And, of course, it's a fabulous story because we're looking at a number of really key characters here, and we're looking at friendship, we're looking at a whole range of things. And there's a lot of humour. I laughed about a number of moments. You did it so well. It fits in with the characters, the situation. It's just you've told it very well. You've given a strong sense of Australian character and attitudes and views. And, yes, that difference between the city, the sophisticated city that takes itself perhaps a bit too seriously, and the country areas, and yet the support that goes through there, so many good things. And while I must say I've always been anti-war, unfortunately there are just some times when you have no choice, as with Ukraine. When you look at that, you think, well, look what those people are going through. They had more than 2 years, and you can understand they didn't want to be taken over and subjugated, etc. And they're hanging in this, you know, those civilians and people hanging in there no matter what. Got to admire the courage, don't you?
You do, and I think that I always come back to the John Lennon song, Imagine. You know,
oh,
imagine
yes.
No country.
Oh, if only.
You know, that there were, that they're invisible lines, especially from the air, when these pilots are looking down, they're thinking, what are we fighting over?
Yeah, you exactly.
Know? What are we fighting over?
And that takes me back to the Bette Midler song, From a Distance.
Oh,
remember?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, because you're looking from a distance, there's harmony.
Yeah.
You know, from a distance, it's totally different.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what if God was watching us? All those ones, you know, David Bowie up in the Starman, and any of them that you're sort of looking down on the earth and you sort of think, what are you silly ants doing running around?
How would you put at risk others and this wonderful world? Because that's the other impact of war, is on the environment, the creatures, the ecosystems, and, you know, and on we go. And it's just such a, so devastating. But
you can't understand it. You can't, you know.
No,
you look at Russia right now, and I might have some Russians after me here, but I just feel like, you know, why are you doing this? Why is this evil man at the top doing this?
Well,
I can't understand why you need this much power.
Well,
you know,
without getting, we won't go into too much. I have to be very careful about other things. Don't spill over. But I think there we have to remember, for Russians, particularly in Russia, the narrative is controlled.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame the people, and I don't mean it that way. I just mean I don't understand.
I know you don't,
but megalomaniacs at the top, you know.
I'd love to talk longer. I wish I had more time, but if I don't go and go to the break and get to my next guest, I'm going to be in trouble. Marianne, it's been such a pleasure. At the Going Down of the Sun, Marianne O'Connor from Penguin. Look out for that, people. It's a great read. Marianne, thank you for your time today. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you. See you later.
Bye-bye. Well, she is amazing. And as I say, I'm going now to those community service announcements and ringing Sean Burford. So do stay with me here on your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside. More Best Medicine very, very soon.
It's Ian Healy, and I'm here to talk to you about back pain and Kesa. If you're one of the 80% of Australians who suffer from back pain, it's tempting to do nothing, but this can cause weaknesses down the road. The best place to start with back pain is exercise, and the best place to exercise is Kesa. Kesa's physios and Swiss-designed strength training equipment help you build strength in a supervised environment. I go to Kesa, and you can too.
Book at one of our 19 clinics across Victoria. Visit kesa.com.au.
Southern FM sponsor.
If you or someone you know are struggling with a difficult situation or feeling down or anxious for no particular reason, a qualified professional counsellor can help you to work through issues and to take back control of your life. Hampton Counselling provides a safe, non-judgmental space to take these first steps towards coping with these difficult times and in setting goals for working towards making a positive change. Contact us at hamptoncounselling.com.au.
Southern FM sponsor.
The traffic is heavy again, which is great news for business. So how do you drive more people to your door? Civic Outdoors billboards, of course. Spending research shows that when people are outside the home, they're 2 times more alert and likely to act. This makes Civic Outdoors billboards the obvious choice for your message's success. Want to find out more? Call Civic Outdoor on 9830 0026 or visit civicoutdoor.com.au. Get outside.
Southern FM sponsor.
If you feel qualified enough to explain how the loud, obnoxious, kind of screechy noise your car makes when navigating a roundabout, yep, that one, is actually a totally normal part of the vehicle's design and not a reason to visit the mechanic, then you can ask a mate, are you okay?
No qualifications needed. Visit ruok.org.au. A conversation could change a life.
Anzac Day commemorations across Bayside acknowledge service to our country in times of conflict, past and present. Hampton RSL will hold a dawn service on Thursday the 25th of April at 6 a.m. Hampton RSL is at 25 Holyrood Street, Hampton. For more information, visit Hampton RSL's website.
On FM, online, and via the Community Radio Plus app,
this is Southern FM.
88.3 Southern FM.
Yes, indeed. And this is Best Medicine with me, Gaetana. And I have on the line my next guest, Sean Burford, who won the title of Australia's Greatest Dunny Hunter 2022-2023 by entering over 130 dunnies on the National Public Toilet Map, and apparently he continues to add more to the map. Hello, Sean, you busy man.
Good morning, Gaetana. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, great pleasure. So the Great Dunny Hunt is back again. This is run by the Continence Foundation people of Australia, and they're calling on Australians to update this National Public Toilet Map website or the app with any new facilities or any other details that need to be added. And they do need to be added because things can change, can't they?
Absolutely. And the last thing you want to do is turn up and discover that a toilet has been closed or the opening hours have changed since the map was last updated. So we rely on the community to make sure that the 23,000 toilets on the map are all up to date.
Wow. So 23,000 for around Australia. And though, of course, the Continence Foundation is concerned with the more than 5 million Australians who live with incontinence, which is increasing, though it's very important to have that relevant, up-to-date map for them, there are a lot of other people who also need to use public toilets. And it could be people travelling around Australia. It could be people, you know, for quite a while. It could be people with families and young kids who need to make sure they've got toilet facilities nearby. There's a whole range of people who would need to have access to the toilets and have very good quality information, because as you say, you don't want to be hanging in there and getting somewhere and finding, no, it's closed or it's hasn't got the facilities that you need. Now, tell us about your method for updating and adding information and things, what you did.
Yeah, so the lockdowns are just finished. And I wanted to, and I saw an ad for the Great Dunny Hunt, mm-hmm. asking for updates to the map. And I wanted to kind of do a virtual tour of Australia because I knew that I really enjoy kind of geographic data and
yeah.
things like that. So I compared what was on the map with other data sources, and that's a good start. But if you just find a dummy in one source, then you don't really know whether that's up to date. So I used several sources to check where the dummies are in Australia and what they look like and what facilities they have. And ended up really enjoying it and adding 130 dunnies 1 year and a similar number another year.
Oh, well done. Absolutely well done. That's amazing. And it's a great thing that you've got that really strong interest in geographic elements and that ability to look at things. And you're quite right, aren't you, that you need more than one source to really check things. So what were the sort of qualities and aspects of public toilets that are really required and that people need to have when they go to them?
Yeah, the toilet map has all kinds of attributes for all kinds of people. If you're diabetic, then Sharp's disposal is really important.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a family like I do, then things like baby change tables are important. But they've also got adult change facilities, which is important for people who have incontinence.
Mm.
And on top of that, they've got accessibility, so wheelchair access. And something I learned is that wheelchair access is not just one thing. If you have better muscular strength on one side of your body, then you might need left-hand access or right-hand access.
Good point. And sorry to interrupt you. I'm just thinking with that, I was really thinking about this accessibility. If you're in a wheelchair, there's things like how wide is the door? How does it operate? And how quickly does it close? What's the speed, the force of it? Because if you've got people going through, whether they're in a wheelchair or perhaps they've got mobility problems, might be on crutches or whatever, you don't want the door slamming into you, do you?
Yeah, that's right. And that's really hard to represent in a generic sense. Mm. It's just a tick box.
Yeah.
And for that, the map has textual descriptions. So when you visit a toilet, you can put in a description and you can say things like the pathway is paved, but the bricks are all rickety and uneven, or the door requires a lot of force to open. And also last year, the focus was on adding photos.
Yeah, good idea.
And photos. Yeah, so that means that if you miss something like there's a tap that provides drinking water that you didn't notice and didn't describe, somebody can look at the photo and see that, or more importantly, things that affect wheelchairs and
yeah,
access.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that. That's a very good point to make. If the even if it's a reasonably flat area and you don't need a ramp, if it's brick paving and things, it can be very uneven and very disruptive, and that can be a problem for people in wheelchairs or people with walking sticks, crutches and other things. It can provide difficulty. So it's good to know all these sorts of things, to have that information so you're ready. With changing facilities and things like that, does this mean that sometimes it's a bigger space, and are the baby change things separate from the toilet or still in the same space?
Yeah, this is something else I learned in my dunny hunting journey. So my local toilets have male, female and accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And the accessible section has a lift for lifting people out of wheelchairs.
Oh, wonderful.
If they need assistance.
Great.
It's got a bed where you can change adult diapers and
yeah.
things like that. And, of course, it's got a wheelchair accessible toilet. This is open during normal hours.
Mm-hmm.
But people with MLAC keys, which they can get from their local councils and other providers, can unlock it at any time to go in there.
Great. And it's just occurred... Oh, sorry, go on, finish. Yeah.
Sorry to speak over you like that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that the other thing we have to mention is another important thing is not only the Sharps bins, but it's the bins for the pads and other things and continence things and for women, whatever. You need those bins, whether it's for blokes, women, or people with continence problems, don't you?
Yeah, there's a lot that happens in toilets, and it's a funny mix of a public space and a private space.
Yeah, because, yes.
and it can be difficult to ask someone, oh, does this toilet have these facilities? So that's where the map is really handy. But yes. All of that's attributes on the map.
And let me add, and I'm a bit of a thing for keeping down the pathogens and the nasties, do all the public toilets these days have a seat and a lid or not? Because it concerns me when, if they don't have a lid, and it concerns me when lids are left up, if they don't have a sort of self-closing one, because it's been shown many years ago and replicated since by proper researchers that when you flush a toilet, if you leave the lid up, then not only water but matter from whether it's urine or other things gets aerosolized and it can travel around the space. They've shown it with bathrooms where they've had the lid has been left up, it's been flushed, etc., the toilet, and stuff has aerosolized, spread around, and even been found on people's toothbrushes. So what you don't want is those sorts of things travelling around and being on, say, a baby change table or other things. So I'm kind of thinking it would be nice, I know it's probably costly, but it would be nice if they did have proper seat, a lid, maybe a self-closing lid, etc. Do they all have, say, something like an exhaust fan?
So that's something that one of my colleagues, Karen Weber, would have a lot of information on. So she got a scholarship to travel around Europe and learn about their toilets and then come back and make some recommendations here. And one of the things she uncovered was the lack of standardisation in Australia.
Yes, so yes.
There's no requirement for many of the things that you would expect. And just aerosolization of toilet water is pretty gross as well.
So. Oh, yeah. And of course, a lot of people just are not aware of it. And I spoke to her last year. Actually, I asked to speak to you because I thought the interview I had with Karen last year was so good. I thought next week or week after, whenever I get time, I'll replay that interview as well. I think it's a good thing to have the reminder and have different perspectives on this situation. And it's good to celebrate you and your work and just remind people of how important this is. And they can learn to do that for themselves as well and help and support the continent's map. I think that's all very, very useful stuff. Did you yourself find some toilets that you thought were extremely good?
I did. But I just want to say something about celebrating 100 toilets versus one toilet. And that is the importance of having accurate information.
Yes.
I did find 130 toilets. But I also mentioned the importance of all of those attributes. Things like opening times and the facilities.
Yeah.
And getting all of those really nailed down relies on people just walking out and checking one or two of their local toilets to make sure that the National Public Toilet Map has the correct...
Yeah, and because sometimes things change, don't they, as well?
Yeah, that's right. But we'll get back to your other question as well.
And I've now forgotten what I asked you.
The best.
The best, that's right. Yeah, some of the best. Tell us about some of the best.
Yeah, so the Continents Foundation noticed my contributions over the past couple of years. And last year they said, would you like to help judge the photo competition?
Ah.
So there were three factors that they were looking for. There was the best accessibility.
Ah, yes.
There was the most colourful and the most unusual location, and I got to help judge that. And you asked about the best toilet I've seen.
Yeah.
Forgive me for forgetting the national park name, but there was a national park that's got a toilet right next to a valley that has a beautiful view. And the toilet wall is about two-thirds high.
Mm-hmm.
The top part is just open up so you can see the valley.
The only thing about that is it might lead to a queue outside while some people sit there and really enjoy their view. Oh, look, isn't that wonderful? And that reminds me of when I was a young child and we'd go out, my mum, dad and myself, we'd be having picnics on the weekend and go to some of the beautiful reservoirs that were beautifully kept and things in various parts of the country. And I can remember Some of the toilets were very primitive, and I can remember one time where my mother was standing outside the door of the cubicle I was in and just saying, "How's it going? Are you nearly done?" Because when I came out and washed my hands, she pointed out a very large spider sitting above and that might have gone into the toilet. So, yes, it's a funny thing. Some of them are really beautiful and wonderful and great. But I'm talking about quite a few years ago. Some of them were a bit primitive, shall we say.
There's no attribute for spiders in the toilet.
No, we don't. Oh, Sean, look, you're doing a great job, and it's a wonderful thing. So do people, if they want to update the map, is there a special website for the map, or do they just go to the Continents Foundation?
So there's information on the Continents Foundation website, but the easiest way to use the map is either www.toiletmap.gov.au,
mm-hmm.
Or they can download the National Public Toilet Map app on iPhone or Android. Yeah. And there's, in order to update the map, they need to create an account and then log in, and then they can say, oh, the opening hours are different, or this has sharps disposal or similar for any of their toilets.
Yeah. And pick, are they going to add their photographs and things, I presume, as well?
Yes, yes.
How recent is the app, by the way?
The app's been actually going since I got my first job.
Oh.
I discovered it when I got my first job.
So. Right. So, look, I hadn't realised about that. Okay. Good. Go on. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Apologies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm dating myself, but that must be 20 years or more.
Oh, goodness.
And then the final step is after they add a toilet or they modify a toilet, there's a survey. And every person who completes the survey gets one entry into the draw for prizes at the end. So
it's not about
adding 130 toilets. It's about just making the map that little bit more useful.
Yes, yes. And it is an important thing to do. It's lovely that people can contribute in that fashion and feel that they've done something worthwhile for others, which is good. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and the thing I like about the survey is they're helping shape the future of the National Public Toilet Map.
Yes, yes. Excellent. And hopefully, with a bit of feedback to various councils and authorities, it will hopefully mean more and more improvements. And, of course, I keep thinking, too, of the number of homeless people we have, and really they need to have access at non-usual business hours to proper toilet facilities as well. So...
Yeah.
Sean, thank you so much for your time today. Thorough pleasure speaking with you, and you're just so rigorous and thorough and dedicated. Thank you very much. What a wonderful contribution.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for promoting the National Public Toilet Map.
Absolutely a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Ah, look, good person. Good person making an important contribution. Okay. Another break and... the last guest.
If you or someone you know are struggling with a difficult situation or feeling down or anxious for no particular reason, a qualified professional counsellor can help you to work through issues and to take back control of your life. Hampton Counselling provides a safe, non-judgmental space to take these first steps towards coping with these difficult times and in setting goals for working towards making a positive change. Contact us at hamptoncounselling.com.au.
Southern FM sponsor.
The traffic is heavy out there again, which is great news for business. So how do you drive more people to your door? Civic Outdoors billboards, of course. Combine Civic Outdoor billboards with radio and you have a super-powered magical duo punch. As people drive by your billboard message, you are driving more traffic to your business. Call Civic Outdoor on 9830 0026 or visit civicoutdoor.com.au. Get outside today.
Southern FM sponsor.
1 in 6 older Australians have experienced elder abuse.
Now, I've been under a lot of pressure. Then we go around there and all she does is complain. So yeah, sometimes I just lash out.
I'm really grateful that he comes over. It's just, I never know what version of him I'm going to get, and it makes me feel unsafe.
How are your actions affecting the older people in your life? For free confidential information and support, call 1-800-ELDER-HELP. That's 1-800-353-374.
Anzac Day commemorations across Bayside acknowledge service to our country in times of conflict, past and present. Hyatt RSL will hold an Anzac Day march and service on Thursday the 25th of April. The march will start at 5:45 a.m. from the corner of Henry Street and Hyatt Road. The dawn service will be held at 6 a.m. at the RSL 1 Station Street Hyatt. For more information, visit Hyatt RSL's website.
What a good place to be. Don't believe it.
Why not start the weekend with me, John, at Fridays at 10 a.m. on Happy Hour. Happy Hour again.
88.3 Southern FM.
And this is Best Medicine with me, Gaetana. And on the line I have my next guest, Vicky Mackay from Sandringham Life Saving Club, and they are finalists in the Victorian Sports Award in the Peter Norman Inclusion Award category. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, such a pleasure. Now, tell us about this interesting program. The award recognises an individual or organisation that's made a significant contribution to safe, fair and inclusive sport in the 2023 calendar year, it says. I'm getting a lot of feedback and I'm not sure if it's going to air or what, but have you got your phone on a speakerphone or what?
I have, but I've just taken it off so you
Great.
Can hear me clearly.
Ah, yes, that's
and
good.
I'm the president of Sandringham Life Saving Club, and we've been running a program for the last 2.5 years called Silver Salties, and it's an active participation program for people aged 65 and above. But everyone is welcome to join the program, whatever their age or ability. And we've been running all sorts of wellness classes and activity classes for the last 2.5 years at the Sandringham Life Saving Club. And, you know, we're thrilled with the success of the program. And we have had about 170 people participate in the program since it started.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have that group of the community become engaged with our Life Saving Club. We noted that we didn't have many members in that age range,
mm-hmm.
and when we heard about the Silver Salties program, which is a Surf Life Saving Australia initiative,
mm-hmm.
We decided it was a terrific program for us to be able to share with our local community what we were doing at the Life Saving Club in a welcoming and inclusive way where they felt safe and included.
Oh, I just think it's absolutely superb. And it's a superb resource for the locals. And it's good, as you say, for people to feel that they are included, they are welcomed, there are things that are relevant for them. They can choose, as you say, the health wellness things. But I also love that swimming class, the Be Confident Swimming in the Bay. I think that's very important because of these days, isn't it? So talk to us about that, please, Vicky.
Yes, well, that's a class that we run on a Wednesday morning at the club, at the beach in front of the club. And it's held by a local open water swimming coach called Peter Hendricks. And he will take the group of swimmers out into the water and help them to understand and be comfortable in the open water, which obviously not everyone has mm-hmm. that experience. Mm-hmm. And so he will work with the individuals that come. It's not a learn to swim session, but it is a how to feel comfortable in the waves, how to work on stroke techniques or breathing to mm-hmm. help you feel relaxed and to enjoy the the water that we're so lucky to have on our doorstep.
Oh, yes. And even if people have not swum for quite a while, for many years, it's a good thing to regain that sort of skill and to get that feel for water and understanding, not be afraid, feel that you can go in, go and enjoy and relax. And as you say, learn to relax and enjoy and get the right feel for things. And probably, too, to read the conditions, too, in the water.
And to be with someone who has all of that experience and with other class participants who are at a similar level, where you don't feel that you have to achieve a certain pace or a certain ability, that it's very welcoming. And then it helps the same, you know, many of the same people keep coming back week after week and building their confidence. And, you know, for us as a life-saving club, it's so important that we help to develop and engage with our local community.
Oh, yes.
For their wellness, but also for their awareness and education around water safety.
Yes.
Your listeners might not be aware that there is an alarming increase this year of fatal drowning involving individuals aged 65 and older compared to the last decade. And so this has been a priority for us at Sandringham, where we've hosted open water swimming education sessions about swimming in the cold water,
mm-hmm.
but also about specific education sessions for older people,
mm-hmm.
so that they're in an environment where you know, it's not non-judgmental,
yes.
and they have learning as well as practical applications, and that's so important that people are aware and that they aren't complacent, that they understand that the risks,
yes.
and that may be the risks in open water, or it could well be risks in their own home around water as well for family members or. You know, unfortunately, these kind of accidents can happen anytime, anywhere.
And when you think of it too, even if they're around the grandparent age, etc., and mightn't be normally intending to be going swimming in the water, quite often they'll be with, have grandchildren. You never know if a child goes in and it seems all right but then gets into difficulty. The grandparent needs to have the confidence and ability to go in there and not die trying to save the child.
Well, this is it. So this is why we have been hosting these water safety education sessions, so that older members of our community can be refreshed with those skills.
Yeah.
It's not so that they have a certificate where they can become a patrolling lifesaver. That's not what we're trying to do. Obviously, you know, there are different levels of education and training for different people. And the Life Saving Club Life Saving Victoria have developed a open water grey medallion certificate, which is, you know, run in other locations around the state as well, and that is something that I would, you know, encourage your listeners to seek out, and that will also be running some more of those. Now that the water is getting a little bit colder, it's probably about 16 degrees now in the bay. This tomorrow will be the last session for us for that building confidence swimming in the bay.
Yeah.
But we will resume those classes again in November.
Right.
And we have our Life Saving Club has also been running a Sunday morning community swim, where we've had volunteer lifesavers be in the water on rescue boards, accompanying swimmers in at the front of the area of the Life Saving Club on a Sunday morning, and that has also been a terrific confidence building activity for our local community members.
And of course the other thing is too, you've got the people who are coming together from the local community, getting in there, enjoying the water, getting more confident, making connections with each other as well as with your volunteer lifesavers, etc., or with the coach. So all of that is very, very good and wonderful. And coming back to your point about the temperature of the water, well, yeah, we've had a couple of very cold mornings. Where I am, it was only 7.5 degrees this morning and 5 degrees yesterday. So, yes, the water would be cold. And, of course, it's not a good idea necessarily, particularly unless you know your fitness level and your health and a whole range of things, to just be leaping into cold water. That could have some ill effects. So, yeah.
Yes, we do encourage all of our swimmers to visit their doctor and have a health check done before they undertake that kind of activity. Mm. Yes, it's important for them to know.
Oh, yes. And I do love it that, as you mentioned earlier, you're also providing the wellness sort of activities like yoga, tai chi, pilates, etc. And that it's not that they have to have an annual subscription. They can just pay per session. So, again, that's very encouraging and inclusive. It's a lovely thing. They're not locked in. They can try things and they can just pay per session. And I imagine that quite often that you'd have them returning and returning because they'd find it.
Oh, well, that's it. We decided that this cohort of people, you know, we know that they come and go, that they've got grandchildren to look after or they have travels, and that's why we wanted to continue to offer those activities all year round, Monday to Friday, where we have a class on every day. People can visit our website, sandringhamlsc.org.au, mm-hmm. and there's a silver salty section there, and it has all the information about the program and the times and types of classes that we're running. We do ask people to register in advance, so that we know the numbers that are coming, and that there's a registration process, but it's not arduous, and then they can come and go as they wish when they're available, and we take cash or online payments as well.
Oh, nice that you still take cash. I'm glad you do that, because I think there are plenty of us who want to be able to do that, and especially when you're only charging small amounts, it just seems sensible to be able to hand over the cash.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You know, and you know, we understand that that's an important aspect for this community that we're working with. So we've tried to make it as accommodating as possible, and we have a lovely membership officer, Megan, who is more than happy to help answer people's questions and to help them through that registration process. And this, all of the instructors have been very carefully selected to deliver the activities and to be able to adapt them for people's abilities or ailments, you know, hips or backs or whatever might happen. It's really important that people are doing this at the level that they're at.
Absolutely,
but their active participation and connecting with others in their local community and doing it all at the Life Saving Club, where there is an amazing view across the bay.
Yeah.
What better spot to be able to do your Tai Chi than on the balcony looking out at the bay. It's a true delight.
That's very seductive, you know. It really is very appealing. How lovely. Oh, look, I think it's great what you're doing, Vicky, there at the Life Saving Club. I think it's wonderful, and it's so, you know, person user friendly, etc., and so well thought out. It's thoughtful, so well done. And
thank
it's
you so much.
Oh, look, it's such a pleasure, and it's good for the rest of the community to know what you're doing. And I'm glad that you're a finalist, and good luck. Very good luck.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, we're really thrilled to have been nominated, and you know, we're wanting to make sure that everyone feels included. And, being part of a Life Saving Club, you don't have to be the fastest swimmer. You know, there's lots of different ways that people can participate and connect. Yeah.
It's not about a competition. It's about getting in there and really enjoying. Vicky, so good to speak
Thank
with you.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Pleasure. All the best to you, and we'll catch up another time and get a little bit of an update.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you very much for having me.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, look, the wonderful thing. What a wonderful idea. And as she said, it seems to be the life-saving clubs around Australia that had that idea of the silver salties. And implementing it so beautifully here in our local area, I think it's absolutely wonderful. And my goodness, the time has just rocketed away, hasn't it? So I'll remind you, the Continence Foundation of Australia, their call out to people to add to the National Public Toilet Map via the website or app. Now, the Great Dunny Hunt is on from, I'm keeping an eye on the time here, Friday the 29th of March to Sunday the 16th of June, which is the start of World Continence Week. Okay, so keep that in mind. And you go to toiletmap, I think it is, .gov.au, and also the Continence Foundation for any more information there. And don't forget also the wonderful Marianne O'Connor's big novel, fabulous story, At the Going Down of the Sun. And, of course, we're going to be thinking about Anzac Day coming up, and it's that day to remember all those who made that huge sacrifice. Some returned deeply injured and troubled. Impacts on families, everyone. I wish you all the best and do stay with us after the news. Phil's wonderful program.